Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. We are heading into the 4th of July weekend. Even though fireworks and parades have been canceled, most people will still be celebrating with their favorite 4th of July foods. Later in the hour, we talk with Becky Sue Epstein about drink pairings for the summertime menu. But first, we welcome back Stephen Reichlin to the program. In addition to hosting the PBS program Project Fire, he's also the author of numerous books on grilling, smoking, and cooking. His most recent book is The Brisket Chronicles. Stephen, so good to have you back.
Great to be back, Mindy.
Yeah, so for listeners not familiar with your program, Project Fire, tell us a little bit about the series.
Well, the series explores the arts of barbecuing and grilling. And Project Fire is my newest series. And we look at some of the cutting edge methods that are revolutionizing grilling. So, for example, last year we did a lot with cavemanning, which is where you grill directly on the embers without a grill grate. I think you came to our house in Chappaquiddick and we made a steak for you using that method. And, you know, it's always guaranteed to make eyes pop and jaws drop. Plus, it just delivers amazing smoke flavors. We did another method called a hanging chicken, where you rig up a tripod over a campfire and hang a chicken from it, and you wind up the string that it's hanging from, so the chicken spins just by dint of the string winding and unwinding, and that's another really cool method.
Now, you also go to different locations to film. Is there one special or favorite place you filmed, either because of the location or the food?
You know, I have loved every place we filmed. Last year, we were in Steinhatchee, Florida, which is a part of Florida I didn't know. It's a town of 2,000 on the Gulf of Mexico. So, obviously, we did a lot with seafood, with fishing. The year before that, we were out in Solvang, California. So, we did a lot with using wine and grapes and grapevines, a lot with organic beef. And then we went down to Los Angeles and we met a half a dozen masters of live fire cooking in Los Angeles. So, you know, each season we choose a different location and that brings a different and new perspective to the kind of grilling we do.
So how has the pandemic impacted your filming of the show?
Oh, boy. Well, in a pretty big way. We were all set to fly to San Antonio, Texas to tape at the beginning of April. And, you know, we sort of watched with growing alarm as first of all, Maryland shut down all work by state employees, and my production partner is Maryland Public Television. So we lost half our crew that way, and then San Antonio shut down. So we actually did not tape a season this year. However, we will be going out in September and we'll be taping a new season for 2021. So, what happened to us happened to everybody.
Everybody, yeah.
So, in the meanwhile, I've been grilling more than ever at home and through my social media. You know, I know my our readers and followers have been grilling a lot. So, you know, we're healthy, and that's the most important thing.
So now typically you and your family are on Chappaquiddick each summer. Will you make it there this year, or are you hanging where you're around home?
I'm hoping we will be there in August and September. You know, we're just still trying to sort out a number of things, travel, safety, and, you know, of course we want to be safe when we get there. So, we will do whatever safety dictates.
Right. So people are gearing up for the 4th of July holiday, typically a time to grill. So let's talk about the difference between cooking over fire, charcoal, and gas, pros and cons of each, and which is best suited for what?
Okay. Well, the debate is usually framed charcoal versus gas. And in fact, about 68% of Americans prefer cooking over gas. About 30% of Americans prefer cooking over charcoal. But my favorite fuel is wood, actually grilling over a wood fire. And I got this really amazing wood-burning grill over the winter. It's called a Kalamazoo Gaucho. And so I've been doing a lot of grilling over wood the last few months. And the beauty of grilling over wood is that, like charcoal and gas, wood gives you heat, but it also produces wood smoke. Now, common misconception about charcoal, it does not actually produce a smoke flavor. That comes when you add wood chips or chunks to the charcoal fire. Historically, charcoal burned hotter than propane. So charcoal food did have a slightly different flavor, but really wasn't coming from the charcoal. Unless you did like my forebears did when I was growing up, you know, it was a charcoal grill, be lit by lighter fluid. They wouldn't get the coals lit properly. So the food I grew up on, barbecue I grew up on, kind of tasted like kerosene and, you know, and unlit or only partially lit charcoal fumes. And I didn't realize that barbecue could actually truly be delicious until after I was an adult and then kind of learned how to light charcoal properly. But, you know, in point of fact, the fuel is one part of the equation. The flavoring's another big part of the equation. So, you know, that would be anything from a spice rub to a marinade to a basting mixture or spraying wine or apple cider on the food as it cooks, you know, to your barbecue sauce, your condiments. That's another big component. Third big component is the ingredients themselves. And, you know, historically, barbecue, you know, the myth about barbecue was, well, you took the cheapest cut of meats you could find and you made them delicious by this long, slow smoking over hardwood. But more and more of us now are kind of giving thought as to what kind of meat we put on the grill. For example, you know, in the arena of pork, do you use cheap supermarket commodity pork or do you look for heritage breeds like Korabuda or Mongolitsa or Red Wattle or these sort of antique-y varieties of pork that were raised more for flavor rather than sheer poundage? Ditto for chicken. I mean, we only use organic chicken. We only grill wild seafood. So, you know, the ingredients are very much a part of the overall flavor, too.
You know, since you mentioned, I'm going to talk about burgers in a second, but since you mentioned chicken, you just brought back a memory I had long, long ago. I was visiting Morocco, and this family that raised chickens, this chicken tasted like no chicken I had ever had before. It was fabulous. And I can only think of it probably was partly in how they prepared it, but also what the chicken ate, right?
Exactly. Yeah. You know, there's a great principle that my wife lives by, and that is that I want to know what the food I eat is. In other words, you know, how the meats you eat, how those animals were raised, what their diet was, because that impacts not only the flavor but also our health.
Yeah. So, okay.
I remember Julia Child once saying, you know, her famous word, it tastes chicken-y. You know, she was talking about breast chicken, that famous chicken from the south of France, breast chicken. And it is true. And, you know, you're making me so homesick for Chappaquiddick right now because we get our chickens from Jefferson when we're on the island. And sometimes we actually even fly them down from Martha's Vineyard to Miami. I feel like I'm buying a full coach passenger seat just to get my chickens
here. And I should mention, you can usually find Jefferson at the farmer's market, you know, so in West Tisbury, if anybody wants to check out those chickens. Yeah. So the fourth.
That's a pang of sadness here.
Yeah. All right, so fourth menus can be simple, burgers and hot dogs, or more elaborate cuts of beef, grilled chicken, or fish. So let's talk about burgers. What is the secret to the best grilled burger?
Well, I guess there are probably three or four secrets. So number one is the blend of meat. And if you've got a say in the matter, I like to use 1/3 ground brisket, 1/3 ground beef short ribs, and 1/3 chuck. And I think that gives you, you know, just incredibly rich mixture. The brisket for its muscly richness, the short ribs for its lusciousness and fat, and then the chuck kind of is the binder. But almost as important as the meats, the cuts of meat you use, are the fat percentage. And you really do need a burger to be pretty fat in order to be luscious. I would recommend between 15% and 20%, closer to 20, if your dietary conscience allows it. Mm-hmm. In terms of the flavorings, I'm a less is more kind of guy. Salt and pepper put on right at the end. I like a thick burger. I dimple the center because burgers are going to puff up more in the center than on the periphery, so that way you get an even burger. Mm. I like to grill over wood. One thing I never do is press a burger with the flat part of a spatula, because all you're doing there is squeezing out the delicious juices. And finally, you know, it's like there's so many little things that go into making a perfect burger, and one of them is the bun. I like a brioche bun. And I always butter it and grill the bun too, okay? And then the bottom, on the very bottom of the burger, under the burger itself, you put your lettuce leaf, and that keeps the juices from the burger from soaking into the bread and making it soggy.
Yeah, good idea, yeah.
Right? Okay, that's important. You gotta have a luscious, ripe tomato, vine-ripened, that has never seen the inside of a refrigerator. You've got to have kind of sweet pickles, which you know, we buy at the farmer's market with Tisbury. Let's see, the secret sauce. Well, all right, I got a confession to make, Mindy, and I'm a little bit embarrassed, but I'm a mayonnaise on burger kind of guy, and I know that just flies in the face of all reason, but you know, can
you know
I say
what,
that's
though?
Who I am?
That's sometimes my husband. My husband does the same thing. He puts mayonnaise, and I do ketchup. And he's like, "Oh, ketchup on a burger!" And I'm like, "Why wouldn't you put ketchup on a burger?" But yeah, he's a mayonnaise guy too.
All right. Well, so, I'm glad. Well,
see, you're not the only one.
I like him already, and you know, sometimes I'll add some freshly grated horseradish to that mayonnaise, and that lightens things up.
Yeah, for sure.
So you know, it's like the burger is probably the most common food in America and the world, and certainly on July 4th. But just by taking all those little steps, you can take it from ordinary to stratospheric.
Yeah. So grass-fed versus grain-fed. Before we get to hot dogs, grass-fed versus grain-fed beef. What's the differences in how they taste or cook?
Oh, boy, that is so hard. You know, the Michael Pollan conscience in me so badly wants to eat grass-fed beef. But the fact is that grass-fed and grain-finished is just so much more luscious. I think maybe it matters less with a burger where everything is ground up, but grass-fed beef is just leaner, and it's it just doesn't have quite that luscious mouthfeel.
All right.
So I go back and forth on that.
Okay. Hot dogs.
Hot dogs. I got a couple tricks for hot dogs. And first of all, I'm a Hebrew national guy, I guess, you know, as Zira Mostel sang in Fiddle on the Roof tradition, you know. But there are two cool things you can do with a hot dog. So what I do is I butterfly the hot dogs. That is, I cut them in half through the side and open them up like a book, thereby exposing more of the surface area to the heat. I cook the hot dogs over screaming hot fire. I get them crusty, almost burnt, because to me that's where the flavor lies. So that's one thing I do. Mm-hmm. Another thing you can do that sort of builds on that same idea is hedgehogging a hot dog, where you lightly score a crosshatch pattern in the surface of the hot dog. Again, so when you grill it, it spreads out and you get more of those sort of burnt, crispy edges.
Yeah.
A few years ago, in a book, I pioneered what I called a hot, quote unquote, dog, and that one was butterflied open. And then it was stuffed with sliced jalapeno chilies and pepper jack cheese, and then closed, tied up with string, and grilled, and the cheese melted, and the jalapenos flavored the hot dog. So, you know, I guess the message of all this is that no matter how commonplace a food, how seemingly simple, by tweaking the details, you can make it extraordinary.
Yeah. Yep. You're listening to The Point. We're talking with Stephen Reichlin, host of the PBS program Project Fire. He's also the author of numerous books on grilling, smoking, and cooking. And his most recent book is The Brisket Chronicles. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. So many ways to grill chicken. Barbecue chicken is great, but sometimes the sugars in the sauce burn before the chicken cooks. Is there a trick to not burning the marinade?
Well, there are many tricks to cooking chicken. And the first one, the one that I think is the most revolutionary for people, is to indirect grill the chicken rather than direct grill it. Now, in indirect grilling, you're cooking next to, not directly over, in the, over the fire. So on a charcoal grill, you'd rake the coals out to the periphery. And on a gas grill, you'd light the outside burners, you'd leave the inside burner off. You place your chicken pieces or your half chickens or even your whole chickens in the center and close the grill lid. So you're almost turning your grill into an oven, except that with a charcoal grill or even with a gas grill, you can add wood chips or chunks, thereby introducing the haunting flavor of wood smoke. Mm-hmm. Now, concerning the sauce, and this was kind of the other... Well, there were so many faux pas in my family when I was growing up. You know, it's really amazing I ever wound up in this field, given how awful the grilling was when I was a kid. But anyway, if you're going to use the sweet sauce, it goes on at the very end. Otherwise, if you put it on in the beginning, the sugar burns before the chicken is done. So burnt sugar sauce, raw chicken in the center, that was my notion of grilled chicken growing up. But honestly, I would serve the sauce on the side rather than on the chicken, because that way you get the skin. When you're indirect grilling, the skin will get nice, salty, and crackly. And then if you put the sauce on, you make the skin soggy. Another thing you can do, and I do this more with ribs than with chicken, is if you're going to use a sweet barbecue sauce, brush it on the last 5 minutes, then move the ribs, I suppose you could do it with chicken pieces, directly over the fire and kind of you caramelize and char the sauce into the meat.
That sounds delicious. All right, let's talk about grilled fish.
Okay, well, that's a subject near and dear to my my heart, both in Chappaquiddick and down here in Miami. Funny, I also do a TV show in Montreal in French, and this year I was all set right after the Project Fire taping to fly up to Montreal and do that show. That, of course, got shut down. So what we're doing now is they're kind of three of us. There are two hosts and a guest, and each one is taping his part in his backyard, and they're going to put it all together. The other night I was just taping for that show, and I used a technique called salt block grilling. Now, you've probably seen these salt blocks at barbecue stores or gourmet shops, and they're cut from a mountain of pink salt that's found in the Pakistani Himalayas. And salt slab grilling is really great for whole fish. You know, when you grill a fish, kind of you have three problems, right? One, it sticks to the grill grate. Two, you go to turn it falls apart. And three, it dries out. And what you do with salt slab grilling is you preheat the salt slab and you grill your fish on top of the salt slab. Most fish are saltwater fish anyway, so they're right at home in the salty environment. And this eliminates all those problems, keeps the fish supernaturally moist, really delicious.
Yeah.
So down here in Florida, I used a red snapper. You know, we've got great snapper down here. Up in New England, I would use that those beautiful black bass, which are just coming into season right now, grilled on a salt slab. They're amazing.
Yeah, that sounds it. I love red snapper, and I have seen it in the fish stores here, but I'm afraid because I feel like you kind of should go with whatever your local fish is. I don't know. I just think maybe I should try it. I don't know. But yeah, there's so many different fish to choose from.
Yeah, well, the other great fish, of course, which we don't have down here is the day boat swordfish. And to me, you know, if you were to ask me my absolute favorite dish of any of my books, my favorite thing to eat when we're up in Chappaquiddick, it's grilled swordfish. And then I make the simplest of sauces ever. I just fry capers and butter and pour that mixture over the swordfish. And
do you know what my favorite on swordfish is? I just squeeze lime and a little bit of ginger, and that's it.
Oh, that would be beautiful.
Doesn't that sound delicious?
Yeah. That would be really nice too.
Yeah. Do you ever use wood planks on the grill when you're cooking fish?
Well, I do, and I tend to use wood planks when I'm grilling salmon, because salmon is another, especially if you're cooking fillets, that's another one of those fish that is sort of notorious for sticking and drying out. But I do something different with the wood plank than I used to do, and that kind of talks towards the evolution, how we all grow, you know, in our skills of grilling. And I used to advocate soaking the planks in water to keep them from burning. Well, now I skip soaking, and I actually char the plank directly over the fire, get it smoking hot and charred, then put the fish on it. You get a lot more flavor, and it also looks a lot cooler.
Interesting, yeah. What about shellfish on the grill, like lobsters, clams, and oysters? What are your tips? Yeah.
Oh, you're making me so hungry and so misty. So lobster, real simple. I simply butterfly it open, cut it in half, brush it with melted butter, and direct grill it. Again, if you can do that over a live fire, it's awesome. And we tend to do that on the beach. We have a beach annual beach barbecue with our with some friends on Chappaquiddick every summer. And you know, we take charcoal grills out, we grill it on the beach, and fantastic. But my all-time favorite dish, you know, Chappaquiddick, where we are, we see, we overlook Katama Bay, and there's an incredible oyster farm on Katama Bay. So we get Katama oysters, shuck them, little dot of butter in each shucked oyster. They go on a kettle grill, indirect grill, with a little wood smoke on the coals, a little wood on the coals for maybe 5 minutes, enough to warm the oyster but not really cook it. Lay a layer of smoke on that melted butter. And, man, you eat that, and it's like the heavens open, and you hear the angels sing Hosanna.
It sounds delicious. We're talking with Stephen Reichlin. We have him for about another 10 minutes. If you have comments or questions, you want to share some of your favorite fourth holiday recipes, 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626, or our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.grill.org. Smoking meats and fish. So can you do it without buying a smoker?
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, if you have a kettle grill, you know, you can smoke anything on a kettle grill. And in fact, I like the kettle grill. You know, smokers work at a low temperature, typically around 250 degrees. That's great for briskets. It's great for pork shoulders and ribs. It's also great for certain kinds of smoked fish. But when you're cooking oysters, I like to work a little bit higher. So, you know, I mean, first of all, when oysters are around, you don't want to wait an hour to eat them. You know, you want them on the grill and off the grill and in your mouth in 5 minutes.
So what about electric versus charcoal smokers? Is there any difference in taste?
I think there is, and I think you get a better flavor with charcoal fired, enhanced with wood, than you do with electric. The bottom line is, if you own an electric smoker and you are pleased with the results, you're doing it right, and, you know, that's what you're looking for.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk about some of your favorite vegetables to grill.
Well, now we're coming to a topic that is very timely, Mindy, because my next book is, as you know, book titles are never cast in stone until the book comes out. But the working title is How to Grill Vegetables. And for the last 9 months, I've been grilling vegetables like crazy, thinking about vegetables. For me, there is no better way to cook a vegetable than on the grill. The high, dry heat caramelizes the natural plant sugars, and that's true whether you're grilling corn, whether you're grilling onions, whether you're grilling peppers, mushrooms, zucchini, you name it, grilling is the best way to cook it.
With the corn, husk on or off?
Well, husk off if you are direct grilling. And I strip the husk back but leave it attached to the bottom of the cob. So that you get a handle to grill with. But if you caveman corn, that is, you can leave the husk on but lay it directly on the coals, and you burn the husk off. And as soon as you see the golden brown yellow kernels, your corn is ready. What I never do is I never direct grill corn with the husk on, because what you're doing in effect with that is steaming it rather than grilling it.
Yeah, makes sense. Let's talk to Terry, who's giving us a call from Vineyard Haven. Hi, Terry.
Hey, Terry.
Hi, how are you? Hey there.
Hi.
Thank you so much. This is a great show. I had a question, and no matter what you say, I'm going to do it anyway. But by the way, swordfish is my all-time favorite as well. Lime. I'm with the lime, Mindy. We have a corned beef left over from March in the freezer, and I'm going to grill it. I just wanted your advice. I know that it's really salty, and I needed your advice on how we can do that. Give it the smoky brisket flavor. This is a true corned beef that's, you know, in the plastic packaging and has the seasoning.
Oh, great. Well, okay. It's we do this blog every St. Patrick's Day on my website, barbecuebible.com. And what I like to do with that is pretend that corned beef, take it out, rinse it off. You might even soak it, you know, in water overnight to get a little of the excess salt out. And then smoke it as you would a brisket. So, in effect, what you're making is smoked corned beef. Really awesome. When you smoke it, you want to be working at that low and slow temperature, 250 degrees. I don't know how big your corned beef is, you know, but you're probably looking at 6 to 8 hours anyway. And it's kind of like pastrami without the pepper. It's so that's what I would do. And if I were up in Chappaquiddick, I would ask you what time lunch or dinner is. But fortunately, you just have to eat it and take pictures for me.
I'm so excited. I will. I'll do that. Thank you
so much. Terry, thanks for the phone call. So back to the vegetables for a second. What are some good vegetable varieties and recipes if you want to make grilled vegetables the main course? There are a lot of people who are trying to eat more plant-based. So what would be some good main courses, course suggestions?
So the main courses. Okay, well, let's see. First of all, the obvious corn. Let's see. Tomatoes. And one thing I like to do tomatoes, I like to get plum tomatoes. And then they're cut in half, and they get slices of cheddar cheese, slices of hard-boiled or smoked hard-boiled eggs, and then I wrap them in bacon. And it's an indirect grill with a little wood smoke. It's sort of a deconstructed, reconstructed English breakfast. You know how they always put a grilled tomato on your plate with your bacon and eggs in England. So that's a fun one. Stuffed eggplant. Grilled eggplant parmesan is amazing. Instead of deep frying the eggplant slices, you brush them with oil and grill them, and then sandwich them with a grilled or smoked tomato sauce and set of mozzarella. I like to use burrata cheese, so it's just melting luscious. Incidentally, Mindy, I do that on a cedar plank too. So kind of a fun recipe. It's a little early yet for winter squashes, but an acorn squash roasted, cut it in half, scrape out the seeds and roast it cut side down on that salt slab I was talking about earlier for fish. That's a really neat recipe. And then you could stuff that with rice, or you could actually make a custard mixture like a flan. We do a Parmesan flan. It's just heavy cream eggs and Parmesan cheese. And once the squash is partially roasted, you put that in the hollow part of the squash and then put it back on the grill.
Never would have thought of that. And I love flan. So just quickly, some grilled dessert favorites.
Grilled desserts. Okay. This time of year, you're probably getting gold bud peaches about now. So those cut in half, brushed with melted butter, dipped in cinnamon sugar, grilled as hot as you can, or cut in quarters, skewered on cinnamon sticks, brushed with equal part mixture of bourbon, brown sugar, and butter. I call that the vitamin B3 glaze, and that's really amazing. And you can serve that over anything.
Sounds it. All right. So smoked desserts. I remember when we came out for that steak you were talking about. You did a smoked ice cream that was unbelievable. I would have never thought of that.
Yeah. Well, boy, I guess I'm spilling all my tricks right now. But I love WCAI. So to do that, you freeze a big bowl of ice. And then on top of that, right at the last minute, you unmold a pint of your favorite vanilla ice cream. Your grill has been set up for indirect grilling. You dump a ton of unsoaked wood chips on both mounds of coals. The ice cream goes on its bowl of ice in the smoker for about 5 minutes. The ice keeps it from melting. The smoke bronzes it, darkens the exterior. And then when you taste it, it's like ice cream channeling a toasted marshmallow.
It's was what was so surprising, was that toasted marshmallow flavor. It's like immediately when you put it in your mouth, you go, this is really familiar. What is that? And that's exactly what it tastes like, a toasted marshmallow. So good.
Yeah, isn't that cool?
It is cool. Stephen Reichland is the host of the PBS series Project Fire and the author of many books on grilling, barbecue, and cooking. His latest book is The Brisket Chronicles. We're looking forward to that vegetable book coming out probably, what, next year? Right?
Be out next spring. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, spring. All right.
We'll be back in touch. Hope we see you.
Okay. And we'll post a link with information about the TV series and books at our website, capeandislands.org. Stephen, thanks so much, and hope you get to visit Chappaquiddick this summer. Thanks for being with us.
Well, thank you, and happy 4th, and stay safe, everybody. Bye-bye.